Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Had a caller from a man who said that he was an Orthodox Jewish man, and he said to me, you should not rejoice when your enemy falls. I said, no, you're wrong. I said, you're 100% wrong. He said, but that's what the boys in the yeshiva are learning, that you shouldn't rejoice when your enemy falls. I said, hey, look. I said, why don't you stop with this hogwash? I said, you're wrong. I said, maybe if instead of going to Israel and just sitting there and praying, you were forced to join the military, maybe you'd also rejoice when your enemy fell. So I got an email now from a rabbi, before you shoot your mouth off and send a letter to the ADL about me. This just came to me. As a rabbi in Jerusalem, originally from Santa Monica, he said, I just want to tell you that what you said about rejoicing when one's enemy falls is exactly right. Savage, the Talmud is clear that it is proper to rejoice when one's enemy falls in battle. And it's from the Babylonian Talmud, Megillah 16a. And he qualifies the verse in Proverbs 24, which says, quote, when your enemy falls, do not rejoice. But that means a person of your own nation who is your enemy, but not when that person is a foreigner out to destroy your people. He then goes on and says, I think that we all understand on a gut level that when a fellow American commits a crime and is put to death, we are faced with a national failure in a way, for our nation was responsible for producing that person, and therefore rejoicing is less appropriate. But Savage, you deserve to know that your thoughts are reflected in the Talmud, and that the wise men several thousand years ago agreed with you. Thanks for being a voice of reason. That really was it came out of the blue, because I was sure when I saw it from a rabbi, he was going to attack me. The word rabbi only means teacher. That's all it means. It doesn't mean, what does the word teacher mean in America? It can mean inspired, it can mean insipid. It's the same with holy men. How could an imam call himself a holy man as this, the head of the imam from the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem came out and said, the killing of a lion. Anything like that? Not in my country, it wouldn't be. What would happen if a priest got up and started calling for death and killing? Or a rabbi got up in a synagogue, death and killing? Or a Buddhist monk, death and killing? The FBI would have microphones in their bowels. The FBI would have a microphone in their cereal bowl in the morning. But if an imam gets up and starts calling for the death of the president, what is this country? What is this world that we're putting up with this rubbish? To me, a religion teaches peace, or it's not a religion worth anything. If it is a religion, it teaches how to get along with your neighbor, and it teaches peace. Otherwise, it's not a religion. It's a political warfare machine disguised in a robe. And I'm not alone in my viewpoint. I'm sick of this. Virginia Rita, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, you made a brilliant statement yesterday. I'm an American Muslim, and I heard you say you wouldn't dignify Bin Laden as to bury him as a Muslim. And that's a brilliant statement, because I wouldn't bury him as a Muslim either. He was the first to distort the Islamic religion around the world.
I think so, and I'm not a Muslim, but to me, why? You said it better than me, but I'll repeat what I said, basically. Why dignify him by wrapping him in the very religion that he perverted?
Exactly.
And moreover, my analysis is that he was a psychopath and a mass murderer first, and the Muslim element was used to justify his psychopathology.
Exactly. I agree.
Right? And I really wish more Muslims who are in the middle of the road here would call the show, because they are the ones who actually had more to fear from these fanatics, still do. How many years have I said the same thing? I'm the most misinterpreted man in radio. I've said on the show for over 10 years that the acquaintances I know, for example, from Morocco, Muslims, you wouldn't know they're a Muslim anymore. You know the next man's a Christian or a Jew in America because most people don't wear their religion on their sleeve, okay? They practice their faith. They keep it to themselves, and it's in a moderate way. He said to me, as a Muslim, he said, we lost 30,000 people from the radical Muslims here in our country. I said, I know that. I know that your people were blown up and decimated by these radical fanatics who want to drag you back 1,000 years. See, I understand this, Rita. I understand all of this. It's lost in the in all of the excitement over this.
Yes, sir. And I wanted to say that apart from all the innocent lives that have been lost, we were the first ones also to get hurt by this.
Like, where? In which country? In which you mean in the countries that I'm mentioning, such as Morocco?
I am originally from Morocco. I'm an American, and I'm originally from Morocco. And, for example, every time I would go to Morocco, I used to get selected for, like, tour research at the airport. And that's all due to this ideology and you know, and this terrorism that happened here in the States.
I see. Yes, it was in North Africa, I think, that most of this horrendous, these attacks occurred in very early on. I wouldn't say the first. So, yeah, the middle of the road, shall I say, the leave me alone Muslim, who's not a fanatic, has the most to lose from these fanatics. So having said all of this, do you feel a lot better today that he's dead?
I feel much, much better. I didn't know how to express my joy when I heard the news, seriously.
Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? I tell you, I felt the relief come over me. Of course this is going to go on, but don't you think it also sends a very powerful signal to the other wannabes that they're going to be targeted for death?
Dr. Savage, it's not me alone who does this. I know many, many Muslims here. They're friends of mine, and they were very, very, very happy to hear the news.
Well, I'm so glad you listened to me. Where do you listen on WTNT in Washington?
No, I'm in Norfolk, VA. It's 7:90 a.m. I don't even know.
Oh, well, as long as you know the call letters, let me send you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Stay in the line. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Henry Miller's statement that it's a cosmic joke, all of life is a cosmic joke, whether it's waiting for coffee for 15 minutes in San Francisco till the darling liberals get through brewing it for you. They think you have nothing to do but stand around and wait for a brewed coffee. What did I go there for? I wanted a coffee and to go back to the radio station. 10 minutes, 12 minutes in a line like they're giving away gold for nothing. All of the precious children from the University of California at Santa Cruz who can't get a job, they're barristers now. That's their prize. They started out as artists. Now they're brewing coffee. It's a cosmic joke. The whole thing's a cosmic joke. $12 for a cocktail is a cosmic joke. Bad Chinese food is a cosmic joke. Ersatz Italian food with Mexican spices on it is a cosmic joke. 86-degree weather in San Francisco is a cosmic joke. The lack of a mayor in San Francisco is a cosmic joke. Let's go down the list. Everything's a cosmic joke except me. I'm the only non-cosmic joke. I know I'm real, because if I step on a nail, it hurts like hell. If I lose a tooth, it's painful. When I get a headache, I know it's real. I had a caller from a man who said that he was an Orthodox Jewish man, and he said to me, you should not rejoice when your enemy falls. I said, no, you're wrong. I said, you're 100% wrong. He said, but that's what the boys in the yeshiva are learning, that you shouldn't rejoice when your enemy falls. I said, hey, look. I said, why don't you stop with this hogwash? I said, you're wrong. I said, maybe if instead of going to Israel and just sitting there and praying, you were forced to join the military, maybe you'd also rejoice when your enemy fell. So I got an email now from a rabbi, before you shoot your mouth off and send a letter to the ADL about me. This just came to me. As a rabbi in Jerusalem, originally from San of this man, which I discovered when I was 18, and I thought, oh, life is horrible, you know, oh, it's me, I can't take it anymore. And then I found this book, The Importance of Living, where he brought the yin and yang together. He taught me that we are basically, although we have a soul, that we're monkeys. Our bodies are that of a monkey. I mean, I know many of you are offended by that, but truthfully, you know, it's been put another way, that we're the Neanderthals, the Neanderthal diet, but You got to remember that the human body is that of an animal. And that's where all your trouble begins. Anyway, this book put me together because there were chapters in it like, let me give you an example. Lin Yutang, The Importance of Living. But I never saw a book like this, which talked about views of mankind, Christian, Greek, and Chinese, our animal heritage, the monkey epic, on being mortal, on having a stomach, on having strong muscles, on having a mind, and on human dignity and the rise of human civilization. Then he goes into enjoyment of life. That's what I'm getting at. And he talks about whole chapters on sex, on celibacy, a freak of civilization. My favorite chapter was the enjoyment of living, on lying in bed. A whole chapter on lying in bed, on sitting in chairs, on conversation, on tea and friendship, on smoke and incense, on drink and wine games, on food and medicine, the inhumanity of Western dress, on house and interiors. And I remember I read this when I was 18 years old, which goes back quite a few decades. And when I first stumbled upon it, I was astounded by this. And it was a combination of sort of our animal bodies with our spiritual beings. In a way, I had never been able to unify the two. You know, kids grow up, they don't know what they are. Either you run too much in one direction or too much in the other. Either you become too much of the spiritual and you try to deny the body, or you become too much of the animal, you know, the pleasure seeker, and you deny your spirit. And this book, for me, brought it all together. And one of the favorite parts for me was Chin's 33 Happy Moments. And I don't know if the people listening to this show, since I'm in a sort of different mood today and I had enough with Obama, this stuff was good stuff. And it was the happy moments of a Chinese as described by a 17th century playwright in China named Chin Shengtan. And he wrote about, he sat with his friends when they were locked up in a temple for 10 days on account of rainy weather, and they thought about what were the truly happy moments of human life, moments in which the spirit is tied up with the senses. And he writes about them, and I'm not going to read all of them to you. I'm going to give you a taste of some of them, and you'll see if you get a kick out of them. Here's one. See if it strikes you as a happy moment in your life. I wake up in the morning and seem to hear someone in the house sighing and saying that last night someone died. I immediately ask to find out who it is and learn that it is the sharpest, most calculating fellow in town. Ah, is this not happiness? Remember this? Remember he wrote that happiness does not consist in the flights of poets, of that kind of thing, but happiness consists in getting your hair cut every 2 weeks and watching your neighbor fall off the roof? That's what I was trying to talk about. In other words, that's human nature, is this normalcy. And also, if you get pleasure in seeing someone you hate fall off a roof, don't be guilty about it. Everyone likes to see their evil neighbor fall off a roof. Here's another one. Wait. It has been raining for a whole month, and I lie in bed in the morning like one drunk or ill, refusing to get up. First of all, that unto itself is beautiful. We work so damn hard in America. We never lay in bed. We think it's bad for our hearts. The opposite is true. I'm a big believer in laying in bed. I believe that laying in bed is way underestimated. I think we're just crazy with our running and our dashing and our this and our that. Anyway, listen to this one. It has been raining for a whole month, and I lie in bed in the morning like one drunk or ill, refusing to get up. Suddenly, I hear a chorus of birds announcing a clear day. Quickly, I pull aside the curtain, push open the window, and see the beautiful sun shining and glistening, and the forest looks like having a bath. Ah, is this not happiness? Okay. Let's see then. Here's another. A few more. It's so disconnected from today. Here, I love this one. To cut with a sharp knife a bright green watermelon on a big scarlet plate of a summer afternoon. Ah, is this not happiness? You get the picture? In other words, can you see a watermelon on a hot day and just cutting it and get pleasure out of it? That's what he's talking about. We've lost this. We think that because the ad men have so jumbled our brains, the mad men, the advertising, that we have to go somewhere to find happiness. We have to buy something to find happiness. We all know that that's rubbish. I have long wanted to become a monk, but was worried because I would not be permitted to eat meat. If then I could be permitted to become a monk and yet eat meat publicly, why then I would heat a basin of hot water and, with the help of a sharp razor, shave my head clean in a summer month. Ah, is this not happiness? To keep 3 or 4 spots of eczema in a private part of my body and now and then to scald or bathe it with hot water behind closed doors. Ah, is this not happiness? I mean, does this translate well anymore? I mean, I love this book. View how simple things are. You know, a few more because it's getting cold. I love this one. Wait. A traveler returns home after a long journey. And he sees the old city gate and hears the women and children on both banks of the river talking his own dialect. Ah, is this not happiness? Now, let's say we don't have an old city gate and we don't have our own dialect, or do we? We certainly do have regional accents. How about when you've been on a long business trip and you come back to your city or your town and just the sound of the horns and just the sound of the cab driver, even if he's from Bengali, even if he is a Bengali. Isn't that what makes you feel good and at home and happy? That's what we're talking about. Here's a nice one. I am not a saint, and I am therefore not without sin. In the night, I did something wrong, and I get up in the morning and feel extremely ill at ease. I am not a saint, and I'm therefore not without sin. In the night, I did something wrong, and I get up in the morning and feel extremely ill at ease about it. Suddenly, I remember what is taught by Buddhism, that not to cover one's sins is the same as repentance. So then I begin to tell my sin to the entire company around, whether they are strangers or my old friends. Ah, is this not happiness? Sort of sounds like Oprah. Here's one that I've really lived by. This is me. To open the window and let a wasp out of the room. Ah, is this not happiness? That's a good one. Have you ever let a wasp out of a room or a fly and felt something? Huh? It is the Savage Nation. Come on, let's get the music going, guys. Pump them up, pump them up. Get the people going. Bring them into the tent. You know, in a few minutes, I'll get into the whole fantasy of the killing of OBL, the latest circus created by the Obama administration. But I want to take you back approximately one day. Last night, yesterday, when I got off the air, I was in San Francisco, as I told you. The weather was just unbelievable. It was a Fellini night, I call it. A Fellini night in the sense that it was too hot for me. But the too hot days in San Francisco become perfect nights. No wind, stars in the sky. It's a kind of night you want to sit outdoors and eat. You can't do it most of the time because it's too windy and foggy. So I ambled up to the North Beach restaurant where my friend Lorenzo Petroni is the proprietor, and you know I've gone in and out of there for years. I got to tell you about a night, because it is a political night in some way, but some way it isn't. And you know, they say living well is the best revenge. I got to rank last night as one of the best nights of my life. I know you say, what? Just had a meal? That's all it was? That was one of the best nights of your life? That's the whole point. And I'm going to show you what it was in a minute. So as I say, I go into the restaurant, it's still light out. I get into an argument with Lorenzo immediately because we're like family. We're always arguing over something. Either he's telling me to eat something I don't want to eat, or he's putting salt in my food when I don't want salt, or he's trying to push his soup on me when I don't want the soup. So last night it was over something else. I don't exactly know what it was. And then he says to me, Michael, you want to eat dinner with us? I said, no, I really just want to be alone. I'm exhausted. The show drained me. I'm tired. He said, no, I want you to meet some people. I said, leave me alone. I don't want to meet any people. He said, no, you got to meet these people. Okay, I'll meet the people. He said, no, he says, up in Bodega Bay, the restaurant, the hotel, the Inn at the Tides. It was the inn in the movie. Remember the movie The Birds? Hitchcock, The Birds up there. I was interested because it's a beautiful town. I haven't been up there in years. So he introduces me to Carlo Galazzo, general manager. Carlo and I hit it off right away. And we start to, you know, have some drinks. I don't know how it immediately wound up to burial and death. Now you say, well, wait a minute. I thought this was a good night. Yeah, it was a good night. But let me explain to you why I'm telling you the story. I'm telling you the story, A, because I want to tell you the story. B, because it was a beautiful night. And C, because at the end of the day, eventually Obama will leave us. The plague of the Obama administration will be gone. And most of us will be able to take a deep breath and try to get a few nights in like I had last night. And I'm not going to let him interfere with my ability to have a good drink and a good laugh. So we start to talk. And he had just come back from Italy with Lorenzo, where they went on a wine tour. And they went and visited some of the deceased in a cemetery outside of Lucca, strangely enough. And I was quite surprised to find that that's where some of the folks have been interred. Anyway, turns back to the dinner. So we get to the table, maybe 8-10 of us. Tables are set up outside. It's long outside now. And people he kept bringing more people in. I didn't know who was going to be there. At this point, as Jackie Gleason said, I was feeling no pain. I just drank tons of his Sauvignon Blanc, which he makes out of his own grapes from his estate up in Sonoma. I'm drinking the Sauvignon Blanc, and we're eating the prosciutto, and the sand dabs come, then the broccolini. Then a guy is in the crowd. I don't know if I should mention his name, but he's got a dog named Duke. I'll just call him Matt. Matt's his first name. Now, Matt loves me and loves my show. I never met him. Lorenzo is a big man. Lorenzo is built like an oak tree. Let's put it to you that way. Don't try to arm wrestle Lorenzo. He may be 70-some-odd, but it'll break your hand. Matt makes Lorenzo look like a stick figure. So these guys are terrific. So Matt loves me. I love you. He says, I'm another right winger. He says, if it wasn't for you, I'd go crazy. He said, you are my God. Savage, I love your show. Without you, I'd go out of my mind. Where's your dog, Teddy? I've been wanting to meet you all my life. Where's Teddy? I want to see Teddy. I said, I don't have Teddy with me, but I want you to meet my dog, Duke. And he goes to the car. He opens the car, and Duke comes out. I don't know what kind of dog he was. He was like a cute dog with some terrier with short legs, but very stocky, much, much, much tougher than Teddy. And he says, I said, what do you feed him? He said, well, I feed him only dog food. I don't give him any human food. I said, well, you brought him to the wrong guy, because if you put him next to me at the table, he's going to get some of the bread and olive oil. He said, no, please don't feed him. Anyway, to make a long story short, Duke had some terrific Italian food last night, but I don't think Matt knows it. So we're eating, and the food is coming, and after 4 or 5 glasses of wine, I'm looking already up at the above to the stars, and my eyes stop on the overhead electric wires for the electric buses in San Francisco. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but there are some older cities in America that still have overhead electric wires that they used to use for trolley cars. In San Francisco, they use them for the electric buses. And at a certain point in the night, I felt as though I was sitting right on the edge of the sidewalk in Fellini's Roma, where the trolley car comes within 6 inches of the person sitting on the outermost seat at the table, even though the table didn't go that far out. And I'm looking up at the stars, and I'm talking with these people. We're eating the food. We're drinking the wine. And I'll tell you the truth, it was one of those perfect moments. Now, needless to say, we didn't get into politics, but I do know this. There wasn't a liberal at the table. It was older guys with some younger guys, because his son was there, Marco, with people his age. Which is always nice, the younger and the older guys, the mixture together. But the Teddy wasn't there, was a real loss. I actually walked Duke up the street for Matt. I don't know why, I just felt like walking a dog. So I took Duke for a walk up to the corner, and there was a homeless guy who was like begging on the corner, you know, with something, playing an instrument. I don't know what he was doing. To show you how good I felt, I even gave him a dollar. Cymbal shot. No, even I mean, I generally don't give homeless people money. It's not that I'm cheap. I do give money, but I don't want to encourage it, but I don't know. I was like, the guy, he wasn't bothering me. He was so happy I gave him a dollar. He's like one of the nice homeless bums, not the aggressive type. They leave him alone. Everyone leaves the guy alone because he's a nice homeless guy. And he probably makes a few bucks here and there, you know, to supplement the city money. But when Carlo told me about his restaurant up there, he actually brought down, he has a seafood wholesale seafood operation up there. He brought down what's known as, there's a certain specialty of that coast, since he's also got fishermen working for him. Does anyone know what I'm talking about from that area, Bodega Bay? Who's listening to the show right now? People in New York never heard of this food. It's a kind of food. It's not scungili. This is different. Scungili is a snail. That's a New York thing. People in New Jersey, New York, let's say from your father's age, know about scungili. I had it once in the Beverly Hills in a restaurant up in the hills there, because they're from New Jersey originally. The grandfather started it. You'd never believe that place. in the middle of nowhere, in a mountaintop off Mulholland Drive. There's like a great Italian restaurant where they have scongeli. And so anyway, but this place is not scongeli. I'm trying to remember it. Honestly, God, I'm groping. Anyone who guessed the name of that fish from, they die for it up. Abalone. Right, they had abalone, but we didn't get it last night because there wasn't enough of it for everybody, so they didn't even cut it up. That's a real delicacy. I could do without it. I'll tell you, the sand dabs are great. And why am I talking about food? I'm telling you why I'm talking about food. Because it was beautiful. Don't you understand what I guess I'm trying to say something else to you. If you pay too much attention to Obama and the charlatans surrounding him and the lies coming out of the administration, you think the guys at this table didn't know what we could have spent the whole night screaming and yelling till our faces were red about this lying bum in the White House and the thieves and criminals around him? We didn't. We all know who he is. We're just sitting here biding our time till he's thrown out of office in 2012. And so, in other words, living well is the best revenge. Now, all of these guys are like new guys to me. I didn't know any of them. But the camaraderie with new people, I mean, except for Lorenzo, I didn't know any of these guys. It was incredible. But most of them were listeners, and they loved me. You know, there was tremendous love. I never go out and look for listeners. I mean, you know that I could do groups, thousands, and I don't do it. I'm very, very withdrawn, and I'm very elusive, and I'm also very hidden and secretive, truthfully.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Let me take some calls. Las Vegas. Cal, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, I wanted to tell you, number one, Joseph Conrad has always been my favorite author, and that you read, you do affect people, because it's very interesting. I've been trying to write what I would have said had I not died at that moment to my children, and I'm entitling that what I would have said had I not already
died. Oh my God, so that's very interesting. Yeah, because in other words, before it's too late to get it out.
Exactly, and there's so many things that you have in your mind that are going to be unsaid. Even though I'm writing this, there'll be even more. And I just, you know, I really love your show, and I love the direction that you take me in, which is very often pearls. And I wanted to agree with you. I'm a sex therapist in Vegas, and I'm finding people very uninterested in this free sex. I'm finding young men who are becoming impotent because they just don't want to have sex, but rather than say it, their body says it for them. The boy.
Wow. So you agree with me that there will be a movement towards this Victorian so-called prudishness again? I think it'll be much faster than that time frame. My guess is it's going to be within 10 years. 10 to 12 years, there's going to be an entire reversal of this libertine, anything goes, let's do it in the road, you know, and the whole sluttiness is going to come to an end as well.
I absolutely see it. My grandson is 22 years old, and he called me the other night to say he's so happy to be sleeping alone. And it's just not him. I mean, my patients are saying the same kind of things.
But when you're a sex therapist, what is the primary thrust of the complaints people bring to you?
Well, primarily I work with couples who are just bored with each other and trying to keep some kind of flame alive. But I also am seeing young men, and this happened interestingly in the 70s, young men who were thinking they were impotent because their body was not responded to a woman coming on to them. And they really weren't. They just were not interested, and their body was reacting rather than their mind.
Well, I remember being taught back in Psych 101 at Queens College. I had a feminist professor, only we didn't know she was a feminist because they were not so self-designated in that time. So she said to us, the human being is the only animal on earth that thinks he is in heat 365 days a year. We didn't even know what she was talking about. And she said most animals go into a sexual heat during certain periods. Period. And the other times they're not interested at all. But man is so beaten to death with advertising and popular mythology that he thinks he's supposed to be ready at a moment's notice, 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. And if he isn't, there's something wrong with him.
Yeah, and it weighs very heavily, especially on young men and young women.
Right. And then the guy thinks he's gay. So then he goes down that road and finds out it's another false loop.
Exactly. I mean, the whole sexuality thing is so confusing and so demanding that it's not even fun anymore. And that's the problem. That's what's happening, and people are going away from it. They're really...
Well, how, okay, so but a lot of people then go into internet porn. Let's be clear. It's a booming business. They give up human beings, and they become a fantasist completely. I'll bet you see a lot of that, too.
We live in a depersonalized, alienated world. This whole, diversity has... When we came to America, when our parents came to America, we merged and we became Americans. Now we're keeping our country fractionalized. You have to keep, your separate entities, your separate diversities. And instead of merging and coming together, we're all separated and alienated, and that's what...
Well, but now that's a little separate, I think, from the concept of sexuality, which is your specialty. Of course, the sexual mores differ by culture as well. Yeah. I would suspect, though, that most of the immigrants coming into America are far more sexually constrained than the population at large. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I really do. I think they're much...
For example, African cultures are extremely restricted sexually. They're shocked by what they see here. People don't even understand that we are at the bottom of the barrel in terms of sexual behavior worldwide. That the very thing we think we are, we're the exact opposite. All of this libertinism is, in fact, a degeneracy of the human spirit. It's not the elevation of the human spirit. And that's all I'm saying, is that at some point there's going to be a gradual... Right now I can feel the gradualness moving in the other way, but there's got to be a limit to this, and I think we bottomed out a while ago.
Yeah, I see it. I see it happening. I really do. And maybe you're right. I think maybe it will be sooner than 30, 40 years.
So why are you writing a note to your children about what I wanted to say? Why do you suspect you should... Why do you feel you should do it now?
I was thinking exactly that. There's so much unsaid and undone, and then you're dead and it's too late. So why not put something in writing? I actually have a lot of written things that I've done for them, you know, over the years that I'm going to leave them. But this is the last thing.
You're very interesting.
Yeah.
It's funny. One of the characters in my novel says, I forget where, it's about terrorism, by the way, my novel, at the end of the day. It's a major terrorist plot that's interrupted by my hero, strangely enough. I don't want to give any more of it away. But in one of the scenes, I have one of the characters saying, for the things that he said that he wished he had not said, for the things he did that he wished he had not done, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And that's, I think that's human life. In other words, can we ever take back some of the things we said that we wish we hadn't said? Can we ever say the things that we wish we had said that we have not said? No, we can't do that.
That's the, Omar Khayyam, the moving finger writes, and having writ moves on, nor all the piety nor wit can move it back or cancel out a line of it. You can never...
No, I never heard that one. I mean, the closest I got to Omar Khayyam was Khalil Gibran.
Yeah, that's one of the beautiful things that he said. You just cannot cancel anything, but you can give what you haven't given, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Oh, well, you mean because there's still time. You don't have to wait for the big deathbed scene.
No, and besides, I probably won't be able to say that much when I'm on the big deathbed.
I know, the big bed. The big bed. Oh, the big bed, horrible. Horrible. Well, let's not get too depressed right now, Cal. Thanks for calling the show. Hey, I don't mind. I got good callers. Let's see. Here's a good one out of Mississippi. Stefan, welcome to the program.
Yes, Dr. Savage, my question is, with all your PhDs and master's degrees in herbology, how did you get started in radio?
Well, first of all, my PhD is in nutrition epidemiology from the University of California at Berkeley. You know, it's in human nutrition and epidemiology, two hard sciences. I had two previous master's degrees, one in medical anthropology and one in medical botany. The medical botany master's was equal to a high-end PhD anywhere else because my master's thesis was published in a journal that is published at Harvard University. So my master's level thesis was as good as anyone's PhD, if not better. How did I go from all of that to talk radio is the question?
Yes, sir.
Oh, it's such a long story. It's worthy of an autobiography. I'll have to summarize it in some regard. I'll make it as short as I can. I don't want to bore anybody. Let us say, because I was a white male, I was denied access to the universities, which is really what I wanted at the time, because I would have been a great scholar. I had shown great promise and published some incredibly insightful scientific papers. but they were not hiring white males at the time in these fields. They were only hiring incompetents from the third world or women with 10th rate degrees. And that's why the fields have produced little or no scholarship whatsoever. So I had to reinvent myself. So I did corporate consulting. I wrote books, et cetera, and so on. But I continued my research. I funded my own travels to the South Pacific. It was a big juggling act. And then around the year 1994, I sent out a demo tape to 450 radio stations that I put together, like a fake radio show with callers. My friends called in and all that. And about five radio stations said, "You're good. Would you like to, you know, be on our air?" Include one was in Boston, and a couple were in San Francisco. And then I went in and did fill-in work in San Francisco, night work, overnight fill-in. Then they offered me a full-time job. Then I was syndicated in the year 2000. And here it is. That's how it. That's basically the story.
Yeah, thank you very much, Francis.
Thanks for the call. In other words, I reinvented myself. See, the young man said he was fed up with he can't make a living, he can't make a job. Well, society said we have social engineering going on right now, and white males need not apply. Now, I could have spent the rest of my life as an embittered intellectual, hating the world. They did it to me, chip on my shoulder, and gotten nowhere the rest of my life. I could have been one of the bums sitting in a cafe, disgruntled, you know, retired or living on SDSI or whatever I put together in my life, been just a miserable human being the way most of these disgruntled people are. Instead, because I didn't want to be a loser and a bad role model for my children, I decided to struggle at age 50 and start all over again, which I did, by the way. And, you know, here I am, thank God.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I want to remind you of another nice, mild professor who was a professor. He went to Paris. He studied Marxism at the University of Paris at the Sorbonne, I believe. He went back to his home country, and he instituted social reform. He transformed his nation. He did not like the mild capitalism that he saw in his homeland because he felt it was unfair, and he wanted the rich to pay a little bit more. He wanted a bourgeoisie to pay their fair share. That's how it started. It ended up with a mountain of skulls. His name, Pol Pot. The country, Cambodia. It is a true story. Watch out where the rhetoric starts. It always ends up with a mountain of skulls. It doesn't matter whether Obama himself is a murderer. What matters is where his rhetoric can take this nation. When he starts in with the class warfare, when he starts in with tax the rich, when he starts in with it's only fair, all you got to do is look back in history, and don't look for Hitler. Look back to Pol Pot in Cambodia. That is the closest fit that I can find. And many people don't understand how close Obama is emotionally and intellectually to Pol Pot. I'm going to repeat it again. Pol Pot was a nice man. He was a mild-mannered professor. He went to Paris. He studied Marxism, which is an economic theory of redistribution of wealth. He came back to Cambodia. And he said that we need to make it a more fair, equitable system. At the end, anyone with a pair of eyeglasses, that was the teachers, the doctors, the lawyers, the engineers, the police chief, anybody who had glasses, the entire educated class, was subjugated to slave labor, brutally tortured and killed. And who did it? Do you know who did the killing? Do you know who did the torturing? It were 14 and 15-year-old animals who wore red scarves, and they were called Khmer Rouge. We have millions of unemployed youth in this country, millions of unemployed youth in this nation who would gladly put on a red scarf and come to your neighborhood and put you into a slave labor camp. All they need is the right person in the White House to organize them. Be very careful indeed with your call for the redistribution of wealth and fairness. It always ends up with a mountain of skulls. Arkansas, Robbie, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Michael. George Soros does not hate America. His hatred is for humanity. Soros could care less about the country a man resides in. His hatred is for the man who resides. And you ask, how can he get away with it? Well, simple, Michael. In America, there is a meekness of the mob and a madness of the law. And that's the way he gets away with it.
Well, he owns the politicians. They're afraid of him because he buys them off.
Exactly. And the mob.
So who represents the American people? Tell me who represents the American people. If we had a representative democracy, he would be investigated, in my opinion, for currency manipulation at the very least.
Michael, no one represents the American people. We've become servile and we are slaves. We just don't realize it yet. And
oh, God, is that chillingly true?
The mob is meek and the laws are mad. And the meeker the mob gets, the madder the laws become. And I have to correct...
Robbie, you're a very well-educated man. Who are you quoting?
This is G.K. Chesterton. Wrote it back in the 20s about the eugenics movement.
My God. I assume that you read about the fall of Rome at many times in your education, Robbie, didn't you?
I've read a lot. Yes, sir.
What people don't know is that when you look at ancient history and the fall of Rome, it was actually the end of civilization, of Western civilization. You're aware of that, I'm sure.
Yes, Michael.
And how did Rome fall? Allegedly, it was a result of vicious barbarian invasions during the 5th century, which destroyed the all-powerful Roman Empire and its centuries-old civilization, and then brought in a dark age for all the people of the West. All the people of the West. So who would the barbarians be today, using that analogy, Robbie? Who would the barbarians be who are out to destroy our civilization?
Well, there's people like Kissinger. There's people who hate humanity. They have a hole inside their soul that can only be fueled by the destruction of man. And the more they destroy it, the better they feel, because the void can never be filled, because they are depraved, and there is no rationality to the madness. And it's gone throughout history. This is nothing new. It's human nature. And the problem is we've become so drugged over that we seem to forget our instinct, and that is that it's the fight or flight, and we'll neither fight nor flight. We'll just stand here and just wait in line.
Well, people should know that Rome didn't disappear. It's just that all of the civilization surrounding Rome and the comforts of the civilization disappeared. And it was during the middle years of the 5th century that Italy slipped away into Germanic hands. In other words, the Germans occupied Italy at that time. That was the end of the Roman Empire. It didn't exactly disappear. It just became sort of run by Hell's Angels, in essence.
Well, look at the Colosseums in Rome. They were built to pacify the people, to keep their mind off with sports. Look at America today. Look at the
nose. Mm-hmm. Let me read you a line from The Fall of Rome and the End of Civilization by Brian Ward Perkins. It was a book given to me by my good friend, Congressman John Culberson of Texas, when he came out to stay to visit us with us. And in March 24th, he went to an event with us, and he wrote to Michael Savage, a great American who will be decisive in saving America from following the Roman Empire. And I want to read you one paragraph, The Use and the Threat of Force. The Germanic invaders of the Western Empire seized or extorted through the threat of force the vast majority of the territories in which they settled without any formal agreement on how to share resources with their new Roman subjects. The key words here are seized or extorted. I believe we are being extorted daily, and that our so-called representatives are no longer our representatives. The only hope we have at this time is for it, and it has to be led by the Tea Parties. They must become more passive. They cannot permit the phony Republican Party to completely deball them. They must now become more Americans. During the election, when Gore tried to seize the presidency against Bush, Do you remember those young men from Cuba with the white shirts in Florida who ran into the polling areas where the vermin with law degrees from NYU and Columbia had been bussed in to rig up the vote? Remember, they came in and started pounding on the glass, and it chased all of these little cowards back to New York? Well, that's what we need. We need young men and women in white shirts and ties pounding on the glass of the vermin on the left.
Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
New York City, WOR Rich, you have a question. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Uncle Michael, how are you?
Good.
Listen, I'm in the telecommunications industry. I'm 40 years old. I'm looking to make a change. I'm going to school. It's not an easy thing. Every time I look around, I keep seeing how corporate America works, and it's nothing exciting.
Hold. You're in communications right now?
Yeah, I work for a telephone company, and you know, they're paying for me to finish my degree. I'm looking to make
all right.
a change.
Well, 40 is a very interesting age. It's an age of enlightenment for man. It's a very important age in a man's life. It's a transitionary. It's a transition in a man's life that is unlike any other I have found. So it is actually a very good time for you to make a change in your life. It's not the last chance, but it is a very good time to have these questions. In a society's in flux, it's also a very opportune time for you to start thinking. So answer your own question, Rich. I'll pretend I'm your father. What have you thought about doing?
My main thing is, after seeing all the ridiculousness going on in corporate America, it looks to me that you can't rely on anybody but yourself, and I keep coming back to starting my own business.
Yes, but in this environment, this economy, you really need a better mousetrap to take that shot.
That's why I'm making a call. You know, do I stick it out, finish my degree, and then see what happens with the economy afterwards?
Yes, absolutely no. This is not a time to go out, and you're not living in an age where you can have the ultimate optimism that you may have had 10 or 15 years ago, where you're sure something will work out. There's no guarantee anything is going to work out tomorrow, because you started by saying someone is paying for your schooling right now, correct?
That's correct.
All right. So wait a minute. So the basics are being taken care of. They're paying you a salary while you're going to school?
And they'll pay for my master's degree if I choose to.
Absolutely. Stick it out. But here's the thing. Instead of partying with your friends, you should spend all of that spare time looking at your opportunities in your spare time.
Three young kids. I spend all my extra time with my kids.
Oh, you're a married guy with kids, no less. That's great. Well, okay, so you're doing it for them. And look, your kids need you, but let me put it this way. You actually have to come first right now. Because if you don't have a livelihood, your kids are not going to have a very good life, right?
Well, you're right. You know, we have a decent life. You know, nothing extravagant. But you know, one of my biggest fears, I have to put this out there, is, you know,
does your wife work?
Master's degree. Am I going to be at an awkward age in corporate?
But Rich, does your wife work?
Yes, my wife works.
All right. So you both have a dual income. So you're actually on a plateau right now. You have nothing to worry about. Take a deep breath. Spend much more time evaluating your possibilities after you have that master's degree. It's not going to hurt your having it. Even if you go into a totally different field or even a business, it's going to help you think more clearly. Okay. That's all I can say to you. Yes, stick out the master's degree. Fort Lauderdale, Matt, welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Savage, I was wondering if I could ask you a life coach question.
You know, that's what I want to do today, life coach. I'm so bored of the news. All right, I'll be Dr. Savage, life coach. Question, please.
Should I get a PhD in molecular biology, or should I go get a medical doctorate degree in medical school?
Are you a white male?
Yes.
Well, a white male need not apply for any positions in the universities today, particularly if you're brilliant. You'll be working behind some of the stupidest people on earth who will pick on you until you eventually leave your chosen profession. So that answers the question of a PhD. Now, with regard to your medical degree, it sounds, if you're a bright enough guy, in the old days you would have wanted to be a doctor. But today, the field of being a doctor is not that coveted anymore, is it?
Well, I mean, looking at the future of healthcare, kind of got an interest in science, but I'm not so sure.
Well, you'll always make a living as a medical doctor. The problem is with managed care, you're going to be answering to some dummy in the government, probably with less than an AA degree.
My
suggestion is that you become a talk show host. All right, no. If you're good in science, and the molecular biology is a fabulous field, it's fascinating. But if you're a white male, you're going to be picked on and you're going to be pushed aside for some dummy who can sit over you and tell you what to do wrong. So I don't know what to recommend. I mean, the fields of science and medicine are not what they used to be.
Yeah.
I'm a cynic. Look, Matt, I'm quite cynical about the university system today. They're cauldrons of communism and hatred. And I see what happened. Did you see what happened to the Spanish professor? He had taught there for 6 or 8 years, right? And he came up for tenure, and a couple of commie stooges in the department lower than him ran a hate campaign against him. They denied him tenure, and he had to go back to Spain because his green card would have expired. He committed suicide because he couldn't take the shame. Do you know how they got rid of him? To a girl, he raised his voice to one of the girl students at some point. She said it was considered sexually hostile. And to one of the boys who was not listening to him, one of the students, the grad students, he said, "Why don't you stop rubbing your crotch and start doing some work?" He took that as a sexist statement, and they drummed him out of the professorship. Can you believe what's going on in these stooges in these schools today?
I can. I mean, as an undergrad, I saw it all the time. I mean, professors are so biased, and the politics in academia is disgusting, to say the least. But
you graduated what, from college?
Yes.
And you want to go back to school now?
Yes.
Whatever you do, don't get an MBA, because you'll be chasing your tail. There are so many people with MBAs that couldn't run a souvlaki stand in Manhattan. I don't think they could qualify to buy a taxi license. They wouldn't even know how to go about the payoffs to buy a taxi license today. So I really don't know what to advise anybody anymore. I would say, do you have any inclination towards business at all?
That's kind of the problem. I'm much more of I like the pure aspect of science.
You're a theoretical guy, and you really do belong in science. And if we still lived in America, I wouldn't even be having this conversation with you. You wouldn't even be asking me. If we still lived in America that was fair, you would just simply apply to graduate school and be a molecular biologist and have a career as a professor, I would guess, right?
Probably.
All right, but you're asking this question because you know in advance of asking it what kind of impediments that would be put in the way of you as a white male. Is that correct or incorrect?
That's part of the problem, and all the politics besides being a concern.
Yes, so I don't know the answer. You know, if you had a business orientation, I would say try to develop a product and take it to market. I mean, that's a long shot, but it can be done. But you don't. You're a theoretical guy, so you're going to have to go into academia, and you may have to put up with dummies telling you what to do. That may be the price you have to pay for pursuing your chosen profession. You may have to listen to absolute morons who are your department chairman, you know, who came from some third world nation and was pushed right to the top of the heap because they pushed everyone around with threats.
There's really no room for freedom of thought.
No. There's no room for excellence in the university, if that's what you're thinking. Excellence be damned. No, excellence be damned. Well, what do you think? We're living in China, a free country? All right. I wish I had an answer. You see, sometimes even a life coach doesn't have an answer. Only a fool would hazard a guess to tell you what to do. Sometimes it's a mixture of intelligence, an intelligent decision, and fate. What are you doing right now, by the way? I don't mean this minute, but what are you doing with your life at this time?
Well, right now I'm seriously considering this.
I'm saying, are you working right now?
Yeah. Loans from undergrad.
I'm sorry, what are you doing?
I'm just working at a local place trying to pay back loans from undergrad. So.
Okay. What city do you live in? Florida?
Yeah, in Florida.
No, I was going to offer you a job, but okay, you live too far away. All I can say is good luck. I don't have an answer. That's all. I don't know you well enough, and I don't know your other inclinations.
Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
I've shifted a little bit into some lifestyle questions and answers for a few minutes. Let's take another one right here on the Savage Nation. Sacramento Lee, what's on your mind?
Michael.
Yes.
I'm redecorating my office, and yes, my wife wants to paint it coral. I want to paint it Merlot, and my gun case is this beautiful, rich mahogany case. Do you decide this problem?
Is this a real question?
It is, absolutely.
Well, look, whose office is it?
It's mine. I want a man's office. I don't.
Who has to live in the office most all the time? You would, right? Not your wife.
Yes, of course.
So what is it? Why does she insist on her color scheme?
Well, she felt that the mahogany would pop better off the wall with the coral background rather than the Merlot.
And but you don't like coral because it's like a rental color.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, if you get it wrong, you get those pink overtones, and that's exactly what I.
Yeah, it looks like a rental office. Maybe she's thinking of getting rid of you and renting out the office. You never know. No, it's like beige. It's like a rental beige. I always worry about people who redecorate with neutral colors. I said, what are you thinking? Why is it neutral? You live here. What color do you really like? Why are you going for a neutral color?
Exactly. I mean,
no, I myself tend towards the dramatic. I like burgundies. I like very bold color schemes. So you want which color?
It's a Merlot. It's a pretty dark, rich red color.
Better known as like burgundy, right?
Burgundy, exactly.
Right, but you're in Sacramento, so they renamed the paint Merlot, but it's burgundy. In other words, if you went to buy a Buick back in the 1950s, you wouldn't have said, I'd like a Merlot Buick, I'd like a burgundy Buick, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, a burgundy, because that's very Bordello-like. That could be why she doesn't like it.
That could be an issue. A lot of my collection is brass objects, so I think that they'll look really good against that dark color.
I do, too, and what you should say to her, if she's not, is she listening to the show?
No, but she really will follow what you say.
I would suggest you say to her in a very nice way, you know, honey, I really like, what's the color, coral?
Coral, yeah.
I really like the color coral, but that's more for a bedroom. I have to spend my working life in this color. I like a cave-like feel where I feel secure, and I want to act like a caveman for you so I can defeat the enemy and make more money.
She'll love that.
Okay. Thanks for the call. I swear I love these segments. This is wonderful fun. It relieves me from having to talk about the naked Marxists in the White House. You know, against Sacramento. What is it? I have one station? New York. Hasida in New York. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Is it Hasida or Chasida?
Hasida, that, you know, guttural Hebrew sound.
Yes. Yes, Hasida like Hasidim. What's on your mind?
So I'm a recent grad from a SUNY, State University of New York, and I've been job hunting. I've had some great internships, great experience, and I've just keep hitting walls. I was wondering what your advice was as, you know, recent grad in this economy.
Very, very, very bad. Very, very hard to be a college grad looking for work. It must be awfully depressing. I've been there. I have been through it most of my life until I entered radio and everything changed. But I remember getting out of college, Queens College. It was a bachelor's degree. I didn't know what I wanted to do. The kids who I went to college with were either going to medical school or dental school or law school, right? And those who couldn't do anything else went into journalism. But you're asking what you should do in a job market where there are no jobs. So let's start with the obvious, and you'll say I've done it already. Are there any family members who are successful, prominent business owners?
Yes, and I've been speaking to them, working the connections, and it's what it
comes. No, let me explain something. We had a family member who we don't talk to, who got out of Harvard Law School 15 years ago. You know what they taught her in her seminar, her last seminar? Look for your first case within your family. In other words, sue someone in your family. I swear to God, that's what they were teaching lawyers from Harvard 15 years ago. There's nothing wrong with using your family connections to get started. Can you go to work? You don't have to. Look, Hasina, you can't ask. You got to demand. You got to lean on them and say, look, there's no jobs out there. I'm super qualified. I'm smart. I can work for you. I can be better than any of your employees. I need you to hire me. You got to be very demonstrative about it.
Right. It's always that fine line, though, of, you know, being too aggressive. And
oh, no, 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 no. This is your survival. That's not too aggressive. What are they going to do? Say no? Or they're going to say Hasita's a bad girl? She's mean to me. She talk loud to me. Are they going to say that? Who are they going to say it to?
Right. I mean, the truth is, what I want to go into human resources, ideally, and no, unfortunately, no one in my family really has connections in that arena. That's
in why I missed that connections in what?
Human resources.
Well, that's like a, you know, an iffy job. Unless they own a big corporation and could put you into a job, how are you gonna deal with human resources? Don't they have a business? What kind of business do they have?
Most of them are like doctors, accountants, lawyers, typical.
Well, wait a minute. So that's not so bad. So you can't work for a doctor because then you're only going to be a file clerk, right? You can't work for a lawyer because they're going to hire a paralegal. That makes you only a file clerk. So actually, unless they own a business, there is no opportunity in the family, is there?
Yeah, that's true.
However, don't lawyers have clients?
Right.
And don't doctors treat patients? Think of the network of your family members and how extensive it may be. If you went to your lawyer, cousin, uncle, whatever he is, and say, I need a job. I need you to talk to your clients. I'm sure you could find something for me. Then you can open up a cornucopia of opportunity for yourself.
Okay, interesting.
All right, there it is. So lean on your family. That's what family is for. That's what family is for at the end of the day. That's what family is for. They're supposed to help a young person who's just starting out. That's the way it works. Okay. Here's a beautiful call coming up. Paul in Chicago, what's on your mind, Paul?
Thank you, Dr. Savage, for all you do.
Thank you.
I'm having a little problem coping with my mortality today because I see that Anne Margaret is turning 70.
I know what you mean. Whenever time I look at Brigitte Bardot, I don't know what to do to myself. Because when I was a young man, she was a sex goddess.
When I was a young man, I saw Anne Margaret perform in Vietnam. So now I'm having a problem. She's 70.
What do you mean? You were a troop?
Yes, sir.
Oh, and you saw her performing like that movie? What was that movie where they performed that Coppola did on the stage by the river?
She was in Vietnam with Bob Hope in 1968.
So what do you mean? You're really not feeling good about getting older because of that, or you're just pulling my leg?
Well, I'm just pulling your leg.
I see. But you're not doing badly for a 64-year-old, are you?
No, I'm not doing badly at all. But you know, it is a sort of a wake up call to your mortality when you see someone like that turning 70. I think.
So what you do is you do 5 more push-ups a day, cut out the pasta, stop drinking beer, and get the Viagra and a toupee, and you'll be in business.
Thank you, doctor.
You know, Brigitte Bardot was such a stunningly beautiful girl, and you look what time and gravity did to that woman. It's frightening. I mean, I'm glad she's an animal rights activist. I like that part of her being, and I know she was one of the first people in Paris 20 years ago to talk about the Muslims taking over France and how they were converting the churches into mosques and blah, blah, blah. They charged her with a hate crime for that. She was a gutsy lady, still is. But, you know, if ever a burqa was designed for someone, it was for the elder Brigitte Bardot. You know, there is an argument for using a burqa, but it's unfortunately used on young girls rather than old girls. Is that why it was originally developed? I wonder. I mean, I'm trying to be fair-minded about it. You know, at a certain point, everyone could use a burqa. In Hawaii, they wear muumuus, right? A muumuu is a burqa without a head covering when you think about it. It makes a great deal of sense for a man and a woman, incidentally. The Middle Easterners have the right idea. They don't wear pants with a belt. Where every meal you eat, you have to let the belt out, pull the belt in, and your gut hangs over your belt. It's disgusting. They wear a shroud. So you don't know if they knocked off a whole mutton that day or they ate a hummus for lunch. They wear a shroud, so it doesn't matter if you go up or down a little bit. It's a human being expands and contracts. We're not a fixed entity. Why don't we start wearing shrouds in America? It might be nice. It certainly would increase the business for the dry cleaners, I'll tell you that. Virginia, Robert, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Hello, Mr. Savage. Robert here in Virginia Beach. I'm going to talk real quick before the F-18s start flying over Oceana Air Base and you can't hear me.
Yes.
So, anyway, I got this son. I'm an absentee father for the last 15 years. Been always in his life, in his sister's life with the child support, and I go see them occasionally, and he's a triathlete in Louisville, Kentucky. He's a nursing student. And
right.
Occasionally when I go up there, I'll write an article, and they will print it, and those are good things. But I got a right. lot of anxiety about going to see this wedding and my ex-wife. And
so what is the question? Should you go to the wedding?
Well, I've committed. I'm in it.
So what is the question? I don't know. Is there a question for me, or you just want an event?
The question is, man, this anxiety thing is come on, this is a life thing. You know, can I listen to your show all the time? I mean,
what you say? What you mean? You're suffering anxiety and you don't know how to deal with it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a little nervous about it. I've got a lot of family members coming there to see him.
Yeah, but it's a temporal anxiety. It's associated with the wedding, correct?
No question about it. He loves.
So it's not. It's not like you've suddenly developed a free floating anxiety that's been with. That's going to be with you forever. Correct. It has a finite attachment to it to an event.
No, sir.
All right. So, this is very important. You're not suffering clinical anxiety in the sense that it's been with you, it's going to be with you, and it's always going to be with you. You don't know what to do with it. You're suffering a temporal anxiety reaction to a real event, and that real event is coming up when?
July 16th.
Well, all right. So that's you got a couple of months now of concern and worry. It's like a man worried about anything else, whether it be dental surgery, an operation, or anything else. So haven't you coped with anxiety in the past before for an upcoming event? What have you done?
In the past, hit some wine, but I don't do dope. Never have. Old Marine, and I just don't do dope. You know, hit the wine every now and then, but that doesn't work.
No. Actually, alcohol only makes anxiety much worse. It depresses you, and then you come out of the depression, out of the stupor, and you feel worse than before. It usually disrupts your sleep patterns if you're not a regular drinker. You'll wake up 3 a.m. with a pounding heart and a sweat anxiety. So I'm going to suggest some herbal stuff because it really works. It saved my life many years ago. Passion flower herbal tincture is amazing. It's out there. There's some great herbal companies that make it. One of these days, I'll put together my own mixture of several different things, but I don't have the orientation to go into the business of doing so right now. But passion flower herbal tea, passion flower tincture is one that I'd recommend. There are others that you can use. You know that common chamomile tea, if it's really good chamomile tea, will actually act like a 2 milligram diazepam, an old line tranquilizer. Chamomile tea is a wonderful sedative, and it's a very mild one. You can buy it right now in a supermarket.
Okay.
But I'd watch out for two things. I'd make sure that you get a brand. Don't buy an off-brand. Don't buy some schlocky, cheap chamomile. Try to get a company that's reputable and something that has a dated package on it, and see if there's anyone selling that tea with a certified amount of the active principles in the tea, meaning the highest quality you can get. I can guarantee you make a cup of that. But there's a trick to it. I don't want to go into it in great detail. Any herbal tea that you make, there's a trick to it, or else it won't work at all. People don't even know this. But it's my feel. Okay, you boil the water, right? Obvious. You got the tea bag ready. It's in the cup. When you pour that water over the tea bag in the cup, you have to put a top on the cup, like the saucer should go on top of the cup, for at least 10 minutes. Don't let the steam rise out of the cup while the tea bag is in the cup and it is brewing, because the steam will take out all of the water-soluble components from the mixture, which is exactly what you need in order to get the effects from the tea. You follow me?
Yes, sir.
All right, well, there's your answer. Try chamomile tea and get back to me in 2 days.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Legitimate drugs, or I'll call them mainstream medical drugs, are certainly lifesavers when they are required. but they should be used as a last resort, not a first resort. And I've written about this for 30 years. I'm a national treasure, a national treasure. I should be invited to the White House because I'd redo the Obama menu for the next dinner that they serve. Believe me, it wouldn't have short ribs on it with honeysuckle pie. Believe me, they wouldn't be serving ice cream for dessert. Invite Michael Savage to the White House. I'll show you what the menu would be. It wouldn't be that. Probably be calamari. Calamari appetizer, cold calamari appetizer. Oh, the special eggplant that I eat. Then the calamari. You know what I had for dinner? You won't believe it. I'm going to go back in a minute. It was later at night already. I didn't want to eat. I said, just give me the potatoes and the chard, no butter, and skip the main course. That is, he says to me, you just want the potatoes and the Swiss chard? Yeah, and I said, skip. I don't need the veal. I don't need the chicken. I don't need the fish. I had a big lunch in the Indian buffet that day anyway. It was enough with the tandoori chicken coming out of my ears. So, you know, go watch your protein intake. There's only so much your body needs and wants. You don't need that higher protein diet. So at night, I mean, I did the potatoes. I slept like a baby, an agitated baby. I got 2 good hours that night. I don't sleep very good lately. I'm worried about the world. I'm waking up with nightmares about the world. I'm hearing Obama talking in my sleep now. It's awful. It's like the Black Panthers come to the house and make sure you have a zucchini garden. And meanwhile, they're going out to their bulletproof cars to eat cheeseburgers. It's weird images I'm getting. I don't know. Just can't sleep. It's just freaky. Just freaky, this government. It's such filled with such liars. Look, they're all okay. There's nothing new under the sun. Like my mother said when she was alive, God rest her soul, when Bill Clinton got caught with Monica Lewinsky, she didn't get excited. What she said was, they all do it. I mean, who's they all do it? What, men or presidents? I didn't know what she was talking about. Because she had a very negative view of men to begin with. So to her, a president was just another man. He was a dog. In other words, she wasn't shocked. She was an old-timer about those things. They all do it. I said, what, who's they, men? She didn't answer me. She had a strange way. She wouldn't answer. You got to figure it out for yourself. I don't think she knew herself who she meant. They all justified Clinton's shenanigans. All the feminists, I remember when he got caught, they all said, oh, it's just shenanigans. But if a Republican looks the other way at the woman, right away it's rape, state rape, just to look at them. All right, any wonder I don't want to do politics? Let's have a breaker for the minute. No break. No, I didn't say go to a break. I want to look at my song sheet now. Let me just go down a list. Kansas City, no. Teenager in Love, no. Tequila by the Champs, no. Eddie, My Love, no. Bebopalula, no. Blueberry Hill, no. I Ran All the Way Home, I Played. Book of Love, I Played. Little Star, I Played. Do You Wanna Dance? No. How about Bye Bye Love by the Everly Brothers? Right now on the Savage Nation, we've got the Everly Brothers and Bye Bye Love.
Bye Bye Love. Bye Bye Happiness. Hello Loneliness. I think I'm gonna cry. Bye Bye
Lamb. Bye Lamb.
Bye Bye Sweet Caress. Hello, emptiness.
See, it's a classic American song. This song cannot be played in Saudi Arabia. It's too American. One day they're liable to pass a law that says you can't play an American song from the Southeast circa 1960 because it's too offensive to the Muslims. I want to shock you by telling you I'm never giving another nickel to the NRA. The NRA does not speak for me. And what the NRA has just done in a fundraising brochure is below the worst stereotype of gun owners. Exotic hunts from around the globe, and they show a picture of elephants that were killed back in Roosevelt's time. I got to tell you, you know, this is not my NRA, okay? The NRA is to the gun ownership issue as the Republican Party is to conservatism, as far as I'm concerned. I wouldn't give the NRA 10 cents, and it's not the only charity I wouldn't give 10 cents to.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now listen up.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
The thing about gut instinct is if it works, then you think, boy, I had good instincts. Obviously, I had enough of an instinct that we could be right, that it was worth knowing.
You know, night falls over Manhattan, night falls over San Francisco, night falls over all of us, and then life itself falls at the end. Where is it written on my birth certificate, I ask myself today? I woke up and I said, "Why? Where is it written I have to save Western civilization? Where is it written that I have to get up every day and carry this world on my shoulders?" So I went and got my birth certificate. It has my name, where I was born and when I was born. It has my mother's name and my father's name. But it doesn't say, "Michael, you shall save Western civilization. You shall be required unto the threescore and ten to scream your heart out as you watch the world going up in flames with quislings at every level of the U.S. government." You don't have to do that. What the heck are you doing it for? Just play rock and roll and do a two-dimensional radio show. You'll make more money like the rest of them. Just have them call up and say, "You're a great American." Tell them, "Yes, I'm a great American." That's all. Then when someone calls up and says, "Ditto," say ditto to you. That's all. That's what they used to. They want a John Nagy radio show. Republicans, good. Republicans going to save America. It's those dams that are no good. You got to vote for Republicans. Don't vote for them dams. No good. Republicans, good. Dems, bad. It's astounding. I don't know if the audience has gotten dumber or I've gotten dumber, but something's wrong here. I have never seen anything like it. The callers are getting stupider by the day. The media has gotten dumber by the day. And so maybe I'm getting stupider by the day. Maybe we've all gotten dumber together under Obama. It's possible that Obama's lowered the native intelligence of the American people by around 15 points since he seized power and he took control of the media. What's most interesting is our confirmed bias that social scientists are useless liberals. Because it turned out that they are. It turns out that nearly 80% of psychology professors are Democrats, and they outnumber Republicans by nearly 12 to 1. And Dr. Hyde told the audience that he had been corresponding with a couple of non-liberal grad students in social psychology whose experiences reminded him of closeted gay students in the 1980s. He quoted anonymously from their emails describing how they hid their feelings when colleagues made political small talk and jokes predicated on the assumption that everyone was a liberal. He himself said, "I consider myself very middle of the road politically, a social liberal but fiscal conservative. Nonetheless," he said, "I avoid the topic of politics around work. Given what I've read in the literature, I'm certain any research I conducted in political psychology would provide contrary findings, blah, 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 and therefore go unpublished." It's absolutely true. So we know that this is true. 40% of Americans are conservative, 20% are liberal, but in social psychology, it's 80 to 20, 80% liberal. And when you look at universities in general, you find it exactly the same ratio. They found that Democrats typically outnumber Republicans at elite universities by at least 6 to 1 among the general faculty and by higher ratios in the soft humanities and social sciences. Well, the fact is that humanities and social sciences are filled with soft minds, where there's almost no discipline, no way to prove anything, and it's based on all fraud. And of course, when you get into the heart of sciences, people are going to be more conservative, in my opinion, because you have to have a stronger mind to go into something such as chemistry or physics or electrical engineering than, let us say, social science. Anyone can fake social science. Anyone can make up a crappy study and call it a humanities. They're worthless fields of pursuit. Nothing good has come out of social sciences or humanities. They're just basically government jobs, in my opinion. New York City, W.R. Frank, welcome to the show. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Michael, yes, I would just like to say that you're absolutely correct. Most of the psychologists and healthcare, mental health care professionals in our country are usually Democratic. They're usually very liberals. I actually know one that who's very conservative. He is actually... He's one of the administrators who is a member of my outpatient clinic. He's a conservative Jewish PhD, licensed PhD in psychiatry.
So he has to hide his conservatism, the way the Jews hid their Jewishness in Spain during the Inquisition. I call them Murano conservatives, those who have to hide their conservatism.
And I have to say, he's a very professional individual. He's conservative, Albert Einstein School of Medicine in the Bronx. And I have to tell you, not all healthcare professionals, psychologists, psychiatrists, even the police psychologists and the police psychiatrists are all liberal. Some of them are very good, you know, sane minded.
Yeah, but it's 12, according to this study, it's 12 to 1. And the point is that these people are focused continuously on women, minorities who are underrepresented, and they jump all over it saying, oh, discrimination, 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 when it may be another reason that women don't do as well as men in science. It has nothing to do with discrimination. It could be that men are better scientists than women. And yet they're always focusing on a false assumption, which is that it's always based upon either racism or sexism or thisism and thatism. The fact is it's not true.
Yeah, but Michael, we can't change the college academia in our country.
No, I didn't say to change it. All I can do is read the article, Social Scientist Sees Bias Within, in today's New York Times. And they discovered that there's a new, they call it an outgroup. They all are obsessed with research on racial prejudice, homophobia, so-called sexism, stereotype threat, bias against Muslim, unconscious bias against minorities. But suddenly the most talked about speech at this year's conference was about a new outgroup. And what is the outgroup? Conservatives. Because there's almost no, there are no conservatives to be, there's 3 out of 100 are conservative in that field.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Somewhere beyond the sea. Somewhere waiting for me.
We all need relief. We need a couple hours of relief every day. We're all going to crack up from the stress of living under this incompetent administration. We don't know which way to turn. That's the truth. That's what it comes down to. Everybody wants a laugh. Everybody wants just a breather. Yesterday in the middle, like in the late afternoon, I go to a certain place. I'm not going to tell you where it is. And they have Latin dancing. So it's like, you know, Cuban style that I grew up on in New York. But thankfully, thank God, it's come to my home county. It's not late at night with the drug addicts. It's in the middle of the afternoon, which was more typical of how it used to be done and how it's done in Latin American countries. I don't understand this going to a dance club at 10 o'clock at night. Don't these people work? I don't understand it. Who can dance at 10 o'clock till 5 in the morning and go to work other than someone with a menial job? So I didn't go for years. So now this place, I heard a band last night. They were Ecuadorian. They were fantastic. All of the great pachanga, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I hung out there, so I don't know anybody there. I go up by myself, and I hang out alone. And a guy comes up to me, and he says, loves my show. And another guy comes up. He says, Mike, he's a musician. He said, I'm a retired Air Force officer, lieutenant colonel, blah, 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 love the show. And these guys are all into music and dancing. And some of these people are great dancers. So one word led to the other, and all of the guys started to tell each other that I was there. And then the owner, who's Italian, you know, really got into talking with me about his food, which is Tuscan, which is very strange, the combination, how good the food is, I mean. And he invited me to be, you're not going to believe this in a million years, right, where I'm coming from. He invited me to be a dance judge for next week at a Latin dance judge. I said, what do you mean? I know what I like. He said, no, I want you to judge the dance contest next week. I said, I don't know how to judge a dance contest. He said, please come here and be a judge next week at the dance contest. I said, all right, I'll be a judge next week at the dance contest. He says, whatever you want, I'll get you a bottle of Dom Perignon. I said, please don't buy me anything. I don't want anything. I come here to enjoy the music and basically be left alone. So that was, you know, was going on, blah, blah, blah. So a guy comes up to me. And he starts talking to me, and he said he fought in the war in Israel in 1967. He was a man, maybe. He must be in his 60s. I don't know how old he is. And he was on the front lines. And he said to me, he comes to a place like this to get away from the world for a couple of hours. He says, you know what? You gotta enjoy life while you can. You know, the old basic stuff we've all heard. In other words, enjoy yourself, have a good time, escape reality with the dance, with the music, with women, whatever, right? But a healthy person can do this and then go back to the reality of their life. An unhealthy person needs the suspension of reality 24/7. So let's say they go to the dance club. Well, then they need to get high. Then after they get through with the dance club, they need to stay high. Then they need to get up in the morning and be high again. Do you know what I'm saying? That's the difference between
being able to live in reality and have some fun, and not being able to live in reality and going for that fun. So there's an article attached to this. We're talking about people who are drug addicted or addicted on their own ego. And the article came out today. It says, pre-adulthood separates the men from the boys. And it's a long article. It says, once upon a time in America, boys became men when they went to war or started a family. And it said those milestones still hold true. But there's an article out, how the rise of women has turned men into boys. And they say too many young men today are stuck in a stage of extended adolescence. And they'd rather hang around home and choose video games or watch the Cartoon Network over adult responsibility. And he says there simply never has been this large a percentage of single young people with so few family responsibilities and lots of entertainment. And he's talking about what was going on in the old days. And he goes back to the 50s. He said in the 50s, most people completed the transition to adulthood, finishing school, finding their first job, marrying and having children by age 21 or so. But he says, but times have changed dramatically. And he says, my students today, they're going to live, if demographers are right, into their mid-90s. So they look at me and they say, no, wait, get married at age 20? I'm not sure I want to be married to the same person for 76 years. And they have a point. And he says, young single adulthood is a stage of development. It's not going away. So I'm going to ask you a question, because they're arguing that it's very hard right now to get a job. Listen to what they say. It's much harder to find your way into your first good job, says Heimowitz, and takes longer still to move to the next professional level. And then they say, in this new economy, young people will take much, much longer to grow up. Do you agree that that's the reason, because it's hard to find a job? I don't think that's the reason at all. When was it ever easy to find a job in America? When I graduated college, it was very hard to find a job. It was never easy. Nothing has ever been easy. You mean it was easier for your great-grandfather living somewhere in Europe with 5, 10 children or whatever they had over there, scratching a living out of the earth? It was easier for him? So it's all a lie. There's some other reason that boys won't become men. What is the reason that boys won't become men? Do you think it's because women have turned into men themselves? He's saying the rise of women has turned men into boys. We know that more women have college degrees. We know that more women are more aggressive than ever before. We know that women look like men, act like men, talk like men, have the morals of men. And so many men don't even want to get married. They don't go out with women. They don't want to get married. What's the point of getting married when they go out and meet someone, have a roll in the hay, so to speak, without getting married? Do you think it's because of women's liberation that men are staying as boys? Do you think it's because of the sexual revolution of the 60s? What exactly do you think is the reason so many men won't get married? Why do you think so many men remain boys, if you want to put it to you that way? I'm going to be talking about wine. And the reason I'm talking about wine is that it's something El Arabiya will not record or rebroadcast for the violent hordes around the world who love to listen to this infidel. And the reason I'm going to talk about wine is because I enjoy wine once in a while, and I found a red Bordeaux. I guess it has to be. Yeah, a red Bordeaux that, unbelievable. If I give you the name of it, I won't be able to buy any more of it, so I can't give you the name of it. I'm going to hint at it. I'm just going to say it's my favorite since I've been a young man, which is Saint-Emilion. Saint-Emilion has always been my favorite wine. Even when I was a young teacher in New York City, there used to be a French restaurant. It's gone forever. It was redeveloped, knocked down. Somewhere on the west side around where the Irish neighborhood was, the Westies were over there. There was a restaurant. I say, after I would teach, I'd walk over there alone. I was always a loner, come to think of it. You know, there was no such thing as friends after a certain age. You know, when you have friends in the first grade through the sixth grade, then when the hormones kick in, there's no friends anymore. It's all associates and congregants, but there's no friends. Particularly in a highly capitalist society, there's no such thing as a friend. It's mutual use, that's all. But since I don't need anybody, I choose to be alone. I mean, when it comes right down to it, that's the truth. So I go to this French restaurant. I was a poor teacher, but I used to splurge once a week on a French meal by myself. Now picture me sitting alone. I would have either a book or a newspaper, whatever I had, and I'd order the meal, a half a bottle of Bordeaux, and I'd sit by myself. And boy, when you finished after half a bottle, it was so beautiful. You'd walk out. You're able to take your life. You're able to take the subway. Speaking of being able to take it, I see that the kids today, there's an article out about how the kids are more comfortable in the digital world or the Facebook world than they are in the real world. They'd rather spend time online inventing fables about themselves than dealing with the hard knocks of life. So I don't know. What would you rather do? Deal with the reality of struggle, disease, rejection, loneliness, and foul breath? Or sit on the internet and make up stories about yourself and think that you're something you're not? How are these children ever going to hold a job? Well, the answer is they don't have to under Obamacare, because to age 28, they consider children. So this wine is an astounding discovery. It was $49 a bottle in a chain store out here, but I got it for $35 because if you have their card, you get a discount. It's worth about $350 a bottle. I got it for $35. I can't give you the name, but it's a sleeper that the minute I give it out, you'll wipe it out across the country. Silky textured, medium to full bodied, hedonistic, lush, pure, and long, they call it. I don't like the word hedonistic. I don't like wine descriptions to begin with. I find it somewhat phony and a little indulgent. To me, a wine either tastes good or it doesn't taste good. Now, I can write an encyclopedia about what I mean by taste. To me, if it's very dry, if it's tannicky, if it has a nice aroma to it that isn't too, berry-like, and I get no hangover, to me, it's a great wine. But the number one thing for me in red wine is tannins. And you want to hear something funny? I like high tannin content in wines, which is, product of sandy soil. It's one of the reasons I've always loved Sante Maggiore and Bordeaux in general. You know that the California wineries I hate to say it because I'm from California, but the reason they cut out this wonderful taste of a tannicky wine is because women, they wanted more women in the wine world, and women don't like a tart-tasting wine. Everything had to become Swedish, not Swedish, sweetish. And so, therefore, the Chardonnays became creamy and undrinkable. So there it is. That's my whole wine talk.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Did you see the pictures?
Yes.
What was your reaction when you saw them?
It was him.
Why haven't you released them?
We discussed this internally. Keep in mind that we are absolutely certain this was him. We've done DNA sampling and testing. And so there is no doubt that we killed Osama bin Laden. It is important for us to make sure that very graphic photos of somebody who was shot in the head are not floating around as an incitement to additional violence, as a propaganda tool. That's not who we are.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
Why are so many boys stuck in boyhood? Why do so many guys in their 20s and 30s, basically, why are they still like children? What's causing this? Is it that the aggressive nature of... Is it because of the aggressive nature of women? Is it because of the women's movement? Is it because for 30 years there's been propaganda that men are unnecessary? Why is this? Why are there so few men? And especially, by the way, this is a very difficult thing to point out, but it's a demographic reality. Caucasian men in particular are wimps, young men. You don't see this as much amongst the Latino men. Many of the Latino men will get married young and have families. You don't see this as much amongst other races. You see it primarily amongst Caucasian men in the West. Why is it that they remain Boy Scouts instead of becoming Scoutmasters? Why are so many men... males, let's put it to you that way, stuck in boyhood? Why is it that they didn't do what probably you did if you're part of my generation, getting married relatively young, struggling, having children very young, basically killing yourself very young to have a family? Now, what motivated people of my generation to do that? I'm going to lay down a couple of ideas that I have, and then I'm going to ask you your ideas. For one... When I was a young man, I knew what was expected of me. There was no question. My parents, my relatives let me know very clearly that a male in our society should go to college, get a career, find a girl, pick one out of the chorus line, get married and have children, or else there were questions about you. There were questions about you in every way. Like, what's wrong with you that you can't get married? I mean, if you hit 30 and you weren't married already, forget about it. You know what I'm saying? You had to meet someone, get married, and have children. You say, well, that was the dark ages. Really? Hey, schmuck, I'd like to say to you, if it wasn't for guys like your father, you wouldn't be here. Think about what I just said to you. If it wasn't for the so-called dark ages, you wouldn't be here. If your father behaved the way you are, you wouldn't be here. Don't you understand that? So what exactly is going on in our society that so many white men, so many white males are afraid to become men, in plain English? In plain English, that's all. What is doing it? What happened? Why are they so boy-like instead of men? What happened to this country? And there are many answers, by the way. There's not a single answer. So let's start with the callers. I've given you one little example. I think there are others. I mean, we could blame it on Hollywood. We could blame it on the women's movement. We could blame it on medication. We could blame it on the drinking water. We could blame it on a lot of things. And there's probably an element of truth in all of that. There are hormones in our foods that have feminized men, by the way. You say, oh, you know, it's right-wing stuff. No, it's true. Well known. There are plastics that mimic hormones that are turning men into guppies. And that's been documented. But that's not the sole reason that a lot of men won't get married. They do date girls. They have a lot of sex. There's a lot of sex out there. And that has something to do with it, too. The women aren't holding it back anymore. They're like guys. I'm equal to a guy, so I'll have as many men as I want sexually. Oh, good, so that's why you're not married? Get back to me when you're 35, 40. Tell me what happens then. So what's doing this, that so many white males in particular are unwilling to become men? Ann Arbor, Michigan. Barry, we'll start with you. What's your opinion? How come so many white males are stuck in boyhood?
I'm going to hazard a guess, but I think from my experience, you hear in a white male community, I don't even want to say that, sorry. You hear what you should make when you take a job, and I think that's outdated.
What you're saying, okay, you're saying the employment expectations are so high that people don't meet up to it and they feel inadequate?
And they hold out or they wait until they get that job that they think they should be getting.
And haven't they ever heard about starting at the bottom and working your way up?
No, I think many of them haven't.
I think that's a very big point. I think it's a very true point. I mean, I know it's true. A lot of young people have the idea that they are too good for menial jobs. Oh, I'm too good for retail, man. After I get home, there's nothing left. So I'll just stay home and sponge off Obamacare till I'm 27. Thanks for the call. So that's one. I mean, I got out of college. I wasn't particularly a good student. I didn't know where I was going. I had a few upsets along the way. I had to leave school for one semester. My father had a heart attack. I had help run the store. So I got out. I was sort of drifting around a little bit. I took a job as a social worker because it was a very low-level, entry-level job. I took the job because at least it was a job. I lived lower than some of the welfare recipients. I had no furniture. I've told you the story. I wasn't ashamed of myself. I knew that, you know, I'll do it for a while. But you know what happens after a while is you get ashamed of yourself. You see people living better. So you have two choices at that point. You could walk around with a chip on your shoulder and hate everybody. Or you could say, you know what, I want to better in my life and I'm going to work harder. I went back to school. I continued. Then I got a job teaching, and I went to graduate school after teaching all day till 10 o'clock at night. I did that many nights a week. So I got a master, blah, blah, blah. I kept pushing myself, pushing. And the more I did, the more ambitious I became. That's the strangest thing. And the older I got, the more ambitious I became. Would you believe it? To this day, people say to me, why don't you retire? I said, there's no such word in my vocabulary. I don't know what the word means. Retire from what to what? I don't play golf. I don't play tennis, etc. There's no such thing as retire. It doesn't mean I'm not tired a lot of the times and exhausted from overwork. I've taken on too much. I mean, I'm writing a novel. I'm writing a nonfiction book. I'm doing 5 shows a week. It is a little too much. The biggest battle in my life that sucked me dry, it's almost killed me, is this battle in the UK. You wouldn't believe it. It's drained me. I hate to admit it. But the liberals, in a way, have beaten me almost to the point of winning. I have to admit it to you. I have to look back over the last 2 years. I'd say the single biggest drain of my energy has been what the illegitimate former Prime Minister of England did to me, Gordon Brown, that corrupt sack of you-know-what, with his porno-making a Home Secretary, Jackie Smith. Incidentally, please go to michaelsavage.com and sign the petition to get my name off the list. It's perfectly free, and it'll be very important if we can break 100,000 names by the end of the week. Anyway, so what's your answer? Why are so many white males refusing to become men? Tim on WOR, what's your answer? Why?
Lack of accountability, Michael. Without a doubt, people nowadays feel as if they're not responsible and they don't have to worry about the outcome of what they do on a daily basis.
Let me see if I follow that, because I don't quite, in my own mind, I'm so overly responsible. I don't even understand what you mean. You mean the young men don't want responsibility?
No, what I'm saying is they're not being held accountable for who they are and what they do and the difference between...
Oh, in other words, mommy or daddy doesn't say, why are you acting like a boy? Why don't you get married already and be a man?
Eureka. Men are not what they used to be. And I think the feminization thing is a valid point, and I think that the drugging and the rest of it are all important issues, but the accountability...
In other words, the way I was raised, good old shame and humiliation is no longer used in child rearing.
Well, absolutely.
It works. It's one of the best principles of child rearing that has ever been invented. You ask, you remember I did a show about 2 months ago on the Chinese mother who's so condemning of her children if they don't, you know, get super A's. Remember that? She said we shame our children. We yell at them. We call them names if they don't do well. That's the opposite of the white family today, isn't it?
Yep, and the nice thing about you is that you're not racist, nor am I. I have a background in psychology and sociology, and I, too, graduated from a very liberal state school, but not from California. I have since become very conservative in my ways. If you look at a black grandmother, for instance, they've basically taken over the role of what a black male should be doing as a father, and they'll do just what you're talking about. They'll do a wonderful job of putting, a young black male in its place so that they know boundaries and so that they have healthy ways about them as opposed to running rampant and not knowing their way.
Interesting. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Hardest act in the world is to be married and have children. Oh, no one said it's easy. Whoever said that was easy? I'll never forget the day I went into a restaurant. I first moved to California, North Beach. The guy is dead now. I don't remember that. I don't want to talk. And he had a placemat that with his own sayings on it, the old school Italian sayings. And he said, anybody can do the easy thing. A man does the hard thing. That kind of thing. I liked the guy. We got along very good because I was raised that way. Who said raising a family is supposed to be easy? Who said that having a relationship is supposed to be easy? Who said that? Where is it written? Where'd you get that idea? And we're trying to get to the reason why mainly white males remain boys so long, why they won't get married, why they won't have children. You can't entirely blame them. Take a look at the women out there. You know, I could go into this whole story, and there's no point, because then you'll accuse me of misogyny, which is as far from the truth as you could possibly get. The woman's movement, no doubt, destroyed the whole concept of family in the Western world. Now you say, well, it's too bad. Women didn't want to be broodmares. They didn't want to just be staying at home while a guy went out and had a good time and, had a career and she stayed home. I understand all of that. But now take a look at where we are today. Take a look at the demographics of America, and you'll understand what I'm talking about. And you'll come to ask yourself, is this the direction you want the country to go in? Because that's the way it's going. And do you want to turn it around? Can you turn it around? What caused it? Why are so many white males remaining boys so long? Why don't they become men? Ethan in New York, you're on the Savage Nation. Give us your opinion.
I'm 26. I got a master's. I've been looking for a teaching job for the past 3 years, and I can't get married unless I'm financially stable enough. It's what I was raised.
Ethan, you said you're looking for a teaching job. You can't even get a teaching job?
Well, social studies is hard to find, especially...
No, I understand. But I'm going to ask you a tough question. Are they hiring minorities but not white males, or are you a minority?
To be honest, I haven't really seen that. I found that if anything, they're just not hiring anyone that's my age group.
Okay, because for a long while it was white males need not apply, particularly to civil service jobs. They put everybody ahead of the white male, but you're saying that's not the reason at all. There's no jobs at all.
No, I think that they.
But Ethan, would you, if you had a decent starting job, would you think you'd look to get married anyway?
Yeah, like I said, but I don't want to get
it. But hold it. Let's take the other side. What's in marriage? What would you want out of a marriage?
Kids, probably number one, eventually.
Kids. So you have the instinct to want to be a father.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, is that still do guys still have that desire to raise children? I do see a lot of men playing with their children. They seem to enjoy themselves. I do see it. I look around. I'm not blind. But I wonder how strong an impulse that is amongst men today. Where do you get the idea? Where does a young man get the idea that being a father is a super thing to be? Being a husband is a great thing to be? Where does he get the idea? Where is he supposed to get it from? If the churches don't reinforce it, if the synagogues don't reinforce the concept of being a father or a man, where are they supposed to get it from? Hollywood? From who? Have you ever seen who writes the scripts, who acts in them? They're not reinforcing the concept of a family. When have you last heard someone extolling, he's a family man? You know, when I was young, I would listen to the parents, directly or indirectly. I'd hear them talking, and I hear them would talk. Well, it's a different world altogether. First of all, there were parents in the house. That's number one. Number two, there were relatives who were in the neighborhood who came over, and friends of the family who came over. Every night there was somebody in the house having coffee and cake, and they would talk. And as a young guy, who listened? I listened from another room, or I was doing my own thing, but you overheard. And you picked up a lot through the wall, so to speak. But they would always talk about various actors even sometimes, and they would say things like, oh, well, he's a family man. But they would say it with respect if they were referring to a particular actor or entertainer. They looked up to somebody who was a family man as opposed to a runaround guy, you know what I mean, that kind of thing. So as a young guy, you get the idea that getting married and having children is a respectful thing to do. Now let's compare that to today. When have you last seen a movie that extols the image of a young man struggling to get his first job, to meet a decent girl, to have a child, and to raise the child, whether you begin in your parents' house, doesn't matter. That was a European tradition for centuries, where the family would, the next generation stayed in the same house. There was nothing wrong with that. There's nothing new under the sun. No one says you have to have a separate apartment every time, you know, each generation. Stay in the same house. There's room for you. I'm sure the parents would probably like it if you don't have the money. It still goes on in most of the world. So what I'm getting at is it's not about the housing. There's something else going on here. And I don't quite know exactly what it is. I ran all the way.
Impalas, I ran all the way home. Now, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, we're going to shift to another song. We're going to do Come Softly to Me by the Fleetwoods next on the new rock and roll on the Savage Nation. We're going to break that record because it's a little too soft for the Savage Nation. Let us go to something real fruity, a white sport coat and a pink carnation by Marty Robbins. That's the next one we're going to do here. I always play this in the spring. Like in May. I remember when that song came out. I wish to God I had a white sport coat. Instead, I had dead man's pants. No, I remember when that song came out, a white sport coat, I was so envious of normal American boys who had white sport coats and ties and went to, like, cotillions. And I didn't understand any of it. I was working after school. Then I worked in the summer. I'm not complaining about it. It did me good. I mean, I'm still working, and I enjoy working. Because I don't know any better. There are normal people who don't work anymore when they don't have to. There's a whole philosophy on retirement that I've never discussed. I don't know whether to admire people who can retire successfully or not admire them. I know I could never retire. On the other hand, I get up every day and say, why am I making enemies and knocking myself out every day on the Savage Nation when I don't have to do it anymore? And of course, I answer it because I have to do it. I am required to do it by law. It's on my birth certificate. You shall work until the last days of your life. You shall work as hard as you have ever worked the older you get. You shall single-handedly try to save Western civilization. You shall work diligently against the enemy within, and you shall be rewarded in the next world for your travails, my son, I hear coming down from heaven. I don't hear anything from heaven. In fact, I knocked and no one was home, to be honest with you. That's sacrilegious, but I'm in good company when I get into that mood, because the truth is, who knows? Some days I range between absolute awe over God's control of everything, and then the next day I feel like, who is the sadist in the sky? I know that sounds sacrilegious to all of us who are religious in one regard, but, you know, you see a baby with cancer. You want me to go down the list, the litany? I get into this lamentation phase during this period of the year. I go into lamentations. It's earlier this year because of the allergies. It provokes lamentations, like Job's tears. It's an amazing thing, but you look at the babies in the hospital. They didn't hurt anybody. What does the sadist in the sky want from them? And then you look at the evil people in this world. They're enjoying themselves, you say. You don't have the... How do you put two and two together? So you have to say, all right, then you go through the whole thing in the next world. Oh, come on, the next world. How about this world?
Stay tuned on your local affiliate, and of course, with God's will and your listenership.
Savage.